Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by, I'm going to call regulars now. I think Randy's on the podcast more than I am, but Mr. Randy Rose, VP of Security Operations and Intelligence. Randy, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you, Sean?
Fantastic. Thank you. And Mr. Timothy Davis, Cyber Threat Intelligence Analyst, Lead Analyst, Tim. And again, you're on the podcast and we'd love to have you back. We've got so many things to talk about, but how are you today, sir?
I'm doing great, Sean. Great to be here.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, what I want to go into, and one of the topics here was a paper that was published, and we're talking, again, we're in AI, right? I think everything's AI at this point, but we're in this evolving role of generative artificial intelligence in the cyber threat landscape. A paper was published, absolutely phenomenal, had to get one of the authors and the lead of the overall group on this on the podcast to talk about this. So, Tim, can we go through really quickly on the white paper that that you created and the key findings that you saw?
Sure. And, you know, Sean, like you said, yeah, AI is everywhere. And that includes in what the cyber threat actors are doing. So what we did in the paper is we took a look at, okay, what's going on out there? You know, AI has been something that's been in the news. It's been in all of our lives for a while now. So how are the threat actors adapting? And what we found was that they're slowly learning to leverage generative AI to improve their existing campaigns, to improve what they're already doing. Their use, however, appears to be limited to a couple specific areas, which we're going to get to a little more in depth on the podcast, but that includes things like phishing or malign influence campaigns. Really, what we also found is that they're continuing to rely on the more traditional tactics, techniques, and procedures, or TTPs, and known tools and known malware, rather than completely switching over to generative AI created or generative AI enhanced TTPs. So despite a lower barrier for entry, that's one of the things generative AI has always advertised itself as, what we're seeing is limitations on what these platforms are actually capable of doing. And that really limits their utility for cyber threat actors. And one final caveat on all of this is that what we did also find is that there are obstacles in attribution. It can be difficult sometimes to determine, is a phishing email actually generated by ChatGPT, or is it a phishing email that just simply is lacking some of those grammar and spelling mistakes and is an otherwise unremarkable phishing email? So all of it's really great stuff. It's really important to see how these threat actors are evolving. And I know we're going to get more in depth on it as we move forward on the podcast.
No, absolutely. Because it's, I think now, and you know, you put it really well, Tim, was as we start to look at the generative AI implication necessarily, and Randy, you know, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, is it seems now that representatively, the cyber threat landscape is starting to evolve, adapting to this capability. You mentioned the low barrier to entry. It kind of seems like it's, if necessarily we're not using this in the cyber offensive way, kind of seems, why not, right? And it just seems like we're evolving to that this is just a tool that's going to be consumed and representatively via the paper. We have to be prepared and understand that it is now part of really our overall defensive posturing. There is a Gen AI enhanced capability. But Randy, any thoughts in that area?
Yeah, actually, I would say that I think one of the things that Tim mentioned specifically, like the low barrier for entry, is really, really interesting, particularly for non-native English speaking adversaries, because English is a really, really hard language to master. It's a wonderful language, but it's a wonderfully messy language, right? It doesn't have very clear syntactical structure. We could get into a whole debate on the linguistics of the English language, but that's one of the reasons that's been a telltale sign for many, many years of you know, phishing emails. But even when we would reverse engineer malware and you looked at the comments, if those comments were in English to try to obfuscate the fact that it was a Russian developer or Chinese developer, the comments were not in normal, you know, British or American English. So it's always, you know, the language that we've used to, you know, whether it's attributing attacks to any bad guy or attributing them to a specific bad guy, we've used language specifically for that. And Gen AI is really, any large language model in general is really, really good at this. Even kind of pre-Gen AI, when you look at NLP, like natural language processing technology, and early chatbot technology and stuff like that, it's always actually done the English language really, really well, which is very strange because it is such a messy language. But I think that's one of the challenges for us when we see that. I mean, not only can it do proper English, like you can go to ChatGPT and say, speak to me in, you know, proper American English, but you can have it speak to you in different regional dialects. You can have it speak to you as if it is a grandmother explaining something to a grandchild. You can have it speak in different slang languages, in not just in English, but in any language, right? Local slang. So the power behind that, and the way it learns patterns, I mean, you can think of it really as, like, you know, LLMs are not rule-based grammarians. So it's learning these patterns from interacting with people naturally and natively. That's going to be a powerful tool for anybody, whether they're an attacker or not. But I think that's going to be the hardest thing going forward for us is, you know, you're trying to detect whether or not this is Gen AI enabled. We're not going to be able to as humans, right? We're going to have to use other generative AI tools or other AI-based tools to help us. And we're going to have to look for other markers besides what we have always historically relied upon, you know, regardless of what we were doing.
Yeah, completely. I mean, you even take native English speakers that are using Gen AI to be better in their space, right?
Exactly.
Reformat this for me. Okay, perfect. Now I've, you know, we start to see it's the utility across many different applications. And in this space, it's like you say, it's that low barrier to entry. And it really then, Tim, you know, we've got to think about some examples that you've seen with the application of Gen AI, specifically in this space, and from the report. Any examples that you have?
Absolutely. A couple big ones right off the bat. Phishing is the most obvious, but it is also the most common because it's the simplest. You know, with a little bit of work, you can get around some of those platform filters to stop you from creating phishing emails. And you can create prompts, paragraphs, you know, blocks of text that you can use for your phishing campaigns that come across in, you know, very good English, very passable, and they're relatively easy to put out there. That's the big one. There's also malware development. Now, this was an area when generative AI came out, it was sort of two dynamics. There were a lot of concerns and fears that generative AI was going to revolutionize malware development almost overnight. We were going to see thousands of strains of new malware instantly created. It was going to turn the world completely upside down. That's not what we've seen, thankfully. But what we have seen is they're starting to figure out ways to use it. Maybe it can't create thousands of strains of malware overnight, but threat actors can feed the malware code to a generative AI platform and tweak it a little bit. Find ways to improve it. If they're having trouble, debug it. Get some ideas for how to fix something that's not going right. And this isn't just for script kiddies or lower level criminal groups. There actually was a report, it's referenced in our white paper, but there was a report out there by Google that found that actually state-sponsored groups, so groups associated with countries, were actually using things like Google Gemini for assistance with their scripting and assistance with trying to figure out why their code wasn't actually working correctly. So you can see how this platform that's available to everyone, it's not just for us to be able to debug things. You're now seeing these sophisticated groups turning to this as a way to try and improve their attacks. Another really obvious one, impersonations and deepfakes. This is an area where you're seeing mixed results. You see very clever ones that are out there, but you also see folks have a very healthy level of skepticism about almost anything they see online today, which acts almost as a natural checks and balances to prevent any of those from going too far online. And then finally, what we saw and discussed in the paper was malicious AI as a service. So there's a whole field of as a service platforms. You may have heard us talk about ransomware as a service. AI as a service is just another one. You see threat actors creating these jailbroken generative AI platforms and then selling them access to people. So if you have some money and you know, maybe a different tiered subscription platform, you can get it to spit out phishing emails or actual ransomware code without having to worry about those pesky workarounds for some of the more publicly accessible platforms. AI as a service is actually quite interesting because what we're also seeing is that many of these platforms may in fact actually not work. I know something called Fraud GPT may actually be a fraud itself. Hold your horses there. But that's something we've actually seen customer complaints online from folks saying these platforms, they'll take your money, but they don't actually deliver the goods. But that still represents an area where there are legitimate platforms. We are seeing those developments, and it's something we're going to need to continue to watch as we move forward.
Well, 100%. I mean, even if you're elite, you're still generative AI enabled. I think that's very interesting in that space. And again, the examples, and Tim, we'd even spoken about some of those with Ryan in one of our previous podcasts. So I'd recommend others and our audience go and listen to that one, too, because we dived into some of the deepfake capabilities that you and the team had reviewed as well. And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break.
Operating systems in the cloud are vulnerable to malware, misconfiguration, and more. That is, unless you securely configure them. Enter the CIS Hardened Images. These virtual machine images come pre-hardened to the CIS benchmarks, providing built-in security and compliance you can trust. Available at less than 3 cents per compute hour, CIS Hardened Images save you time and money managing your cloud security posture. Available on all major cloud service platforms. So spin one up today by visiting cisecurity.org.
Thank you. And let's jump back into the episode. But now, Randy, as we move into thinking about this evolution, and we're thinking about traditional cyber attack methodology, that is obviously, it seems to be upgraded. Does that align with your thoughts as we continue down this path of this evolution?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, Tim hit on something that I think is really interesting, kind of really early on. He mentioned the low barrier to entry. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that we've probably have to think about as an organization that's focused on cybersecurity and really as a community, is that where generative AI allows anybody to skill up very quickly. I like to think of AI less as artificial intelligence and more as augmented intelligence, right? So it allows us to augment skills that we have, or maybe augment skills, you know, by filling a gap that we don't have, right? A gap that exists, right? A skill that we don't have. So if you think about it from that perspective, anybody who's using Gen AI, I mean, just pick your average person, not even an attacker. Most of them are not using it in ways that are particularly effective, right? A lot of people still use generative AI platforms like a search engine, because they're used to that, right? They go into Google, they search for something, they get a response, like, this is pretty cool. And then they just continue to go ask questions. They don't use AI effectively to bypass some of those controls Tim was talking about, to really build, they're not going in there and saying, like, you know, imagine you are, you know, a cybersecurity professional and you're tasked with building out a new subscription service, you know, build me a business case tied to a subscription service for cyber threat intelligence or something like that, right? A lot of people aren't giving it a role and having it generate these new ideas. They're treating it just like a normal search engine. And I think that's true of attackers as well. At the end of the day, so years ago when I worked for the Navy, one of the things that I think I had a big assumption that every Russian attacker was a really sophisticated attacker. Like, we put Russia on this pedestal and we were like, these guys are the best of the best, they're near peer threats. And we had a number of incidents that we responded to. We found out, and we knew they were Russian attackers. In fact, they were using techniques aligned with some of the APTs that we tracked as like the most, you know, the best of the best. But we observed that they weren't really doing things that were particularly sophisticated. And when we removed certain accesses, we saw them kind of go through a playbook that was clearly scripted. So in those cases, like even these sophisticated groups are following a script. They're, you know, in many cases, you almost think of them like a help desk personnel, right? They're just reading the script. They hit something that's not in the script and they kind of bug out. They're like, oh, I don't really know what to do. Let me start over from the step one in my script. And so I think there's a lot of actors out there that are in that space, right? Tim talked about the limitations on malware capabilities, like building new malware. But he also talked about threat actors using Gen AI to help find their own coding flaws, right? These guys are still human at the end of the day. They're going to make mistakes. They're probably not skilled prompt engineers in many cases. So, you know, they're, and because a lot of them are not native English speakers, we might still see some errors, right? Just they won't catch the fact that Gen AI didn't say something, said, you know, I'll put something in a way that we wouldn't normally say it as a human speaker. So there might still be some things like that to look for. I think, you know, the biggest issue for us is Gen AI increases the scale at which actors can potentially reach a target audience, right? They can scale out faster because maybe they do offset some of the, you know, the hard kind of rote tasks. They can use Gen AI to help them, you know, do things that used to take a long time. And now they can speed up, you know, gain some speed efficiencies and things like that. But I don't think we're at a place just yet where they're able to really use AI to evade detection in mass. Or to, you know, conduct truly low and slow espionage attacks in mass, or conduct really, you know, advanced multimodal attacks in mass, right? I don't think we're there yet. I think what we're seeing is, you know, script kiddies are using it to skill up a little bit. I think we're seeing a lot of people scaling outward, but I just we're not quite at the ready to hit the panic button just yet.
Gotcha. No, that's good. I mean, because ultimately it provides an element of there is elements of things we can do. And representatively, it's not just, oh, it's, you know, that they've automated the entire, attack chain. And, good luck. Right. We'll go from there. So, you know, when I'm thinking about that, Randy, and you hit on a couple of points there is, you know, is it a technical barrier, Tim, or potentially a language barrier that could be limiting this widespread adoption of generative AI capability by threat actors? Or is it more those barriers are being eliminated at kind of a high velocity? You know, because you went into and mentioned, I'll call it the ethics engine, right? And, you know, I can't build your malware, but I could put in a prompt and bypass that, right? And it seems like those barriers, and I don't even want to do that. I'll build my own language model and, support it in my own way. And representatively, we've got distributed cloud capability to enable and build this type of capability. So what technical barriers are you seeing, Tim, for widespread adoption?
So I think one of the biggest barriers Randy actually phrased really well is that folks are still using this like just a search engine. That's something we're seeing from cyber threat actors. There was a report, that same report by Google, you know, referenced in the white paper, that they saw cyber threat actors actually trying to use some publicly available jailbreak prompts that were wildly unsuccessful to get around safety controls. You know, they couldn't come up with any on their own. They probably Googled jailbreak prompts for Gemini and then tried using those, by which point, you know, Google was well aware of them and had patched it against that. What you're also seeing here in terms of technical limitations is skill limitations. Yes, generative AI lowers that barrier to entry, but it doesn't do much once you're inside. You still need technical skills to be able to do things on your own. Generative AI isn't to the point where it can do everything for you. So if you're asking generative AI to produce you a bunch of code in C++ and you have no idea what C++ actually is, when it comes time to use that, you're not going to be very effective. And that's one of the biggest limitations we're seeing is that generative AI can only get you so far. You still need skills. You still need the capabilities to be able to figure out when something goes wrong. Sure, you can use generative AI to debug code, but you need the skills to debug whatever generative AI spits out that may in fact be wrong. That same Google report actually tracked a couple of North Korean cyber threat actors. They were trying to use Gemini to develop a webcam recording tool in C++. However, the code didn't work. Whatever Gemini was putting out didn't work. And this was my favorite part of the report, that Google noted that they were potentially suggested their frustration by Gemini's answers with how they were continuing to ask for it. So, you know, even cyber threat actors can get annoyed at the computers these days. We on the CTI team, we actually tested this out ourselves to get a real world example. We had ChatGPT go ahead and create us some ransomware, and then we went and tested it in the safe environment on a simple text file. But what we found was that while it spit out the code, it still required our team to have the technical knowledge to even execute it. We needed to understand file paths because the script that was put out only actually would encrypt something on a specific file path. You needed to set up a command and control or a C2 server. You needed administrator access. It had all of these limitations that, while yes, I could say I have no technical skills and I wrote ransomware, at the end of the day, I may not be able to actually deploy that ransomware because I lack those technical skills to be able to carry it to the finish line. Now, is this somewhere that generative AI could continue to evolve and foreseeably close that gap? Absolutely, because with enough prompting, you can probably get an answer that is spelled out in great detail that you yourself can execute. But it also gets back to one of those key points from the beginning, that is it really worth it for threat actors at this point to spend a huge amount of time trying to figure out how to generate this new and novel code that may or may not work, that's going to require a huge amount of time and commitment to be able to fix it, or go buy ransomware access from one of the many groups out there these days that is currently selling that ransomware access. And right now, what we're seeing is a preference to do just that. Maybe that'll change in the future, but right now, using existing stuff is winning.
Yeah, probably one of the more like useful cases when it comes to the coding stuff is one of the things that Gen AI is particularly good at is interacting with from a teaching perspective. So if the threat actors want to use Gen AI to help teach them how to code rather than develop the ransomware themselves, use the Gen AI to develop the ransomware, develop the skills using Gen AI to build their own ransomware would probably be, not to give them ideas, but probably be a better use case, right? More effective use case. And then they're scaling up, right? As opposed to just having to rely on that ransomware as a service model that Tim was talking about.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So Randy, now you've given an idea. What are our network defensive capabilities? Have you seen defenders utilizing generative AI in a way that is conducive to protection, mitigation of cyber threat at this point? Has that started also to evolve, not only necessarily as building the new mousetrap, right, the new generative AI mousetrap? Has that started to gain an evolution necessary in the defensive space?
I don't know if I would say Gen AI tools for defense, but I mean, the security community has been using different AI technologies for many years, decades even, right? I mean, we've had machine learning built into a number of our capabilities for a long, long time. Pretty much every SIM that you come across, most database technologies, even anything that's doing data ingress, egress, and formatting and enhanced transforming and loading of data. I mean, a lot of that is using data-driven AI or machine learning-based capabilities at scale, right? So I think there's a lot of AI enhanced cybersecurity capabilities out there. It just probably isn't really in the Gen AI space. One area where I think we are seeing generative AI used in a defensive purpose is testing of our own folks. So we are seeing, you know, red teamers using Gen AI to develop phishing simulations that are tailored to the organization, whether it's a customer organization or their own organization. We're seeing folks use Gen AI for building better processes and control, helping them develop a plan for implementation of controls. We're seeing one of the things that Gen AI is really good at is developing, you know, workflows and work plans and templates. So we're seeing people use it to develop IR templates and incident response templates and disaster recovery templates, and helping them come up with planning mechanisms from a almost more like a controls implementation and a GRC standpoint. So you know, because it, you know, the power of Gen AI is generating new content. So when you think about it from a defense perspective, it's really about helping me think differently about how I do security, not necessarily how do I use this, you know, this generation platform to defend and detect.
No, 100%. One of the novel ideas I'd heard was, and you mentioned in the GRC space, was to use all of the logs and telemetry from a system, put them in a large language model, and interact with that data in order to do elements of compliance and governance. I thought it was pretty interesting as, you know, to build out rather than a SIM, and, you know, we'll use either SQL or search process language in order to identify certain actions. And this was utilizing a language model to, you know, where were the violations? You know, use this policy. What are we doing wrong? And it just seemed very interesting that that was, you know, a capability that we were seeing. But then also it leads to, who, you know, what model are we using? Who has access to that data? You know, how's that model being built and things like that? But I thought the theory of it sounded pretty interesting in order to have a conversation with representatively your resiliency and capabilities and determine whether or not there were gaps or issues there. So I thought that was an interesting application as, you know, an evolution of the technology, maybe not a complete solution. And again, there is no silver bullet in this space, but just an interesting process necessarily of adapting and utilizing the technology in a net positive way. I mean, you could get lost in necessarily the conversation of trying to dive into representatively the data, but very interesting.
One of the things I think AI does, and well, specifically like machine learning capabilities, what they do really, really well is they look at a lot of data very rapidly and they can cluster, sometimes smartly cluster, right? The AI piece of it is finding different ways to cluster data that we might not think of when we look at data in mass, right? So we look at data, you know, we might be limited, you know, say I'm not really a data analyst, but I put my data analyst hat on and I know two ways of clustering data, right? But that might not be the right way, right? Like I might know k-means clustering. So I throw everything into k-means clustering and I don't really find anything. But an AI model knows, you know, all these different ways to cluster data, and they can find anomalies at scale much better than I can find anomalies. And so I think that's one of the ways that we're starting to see. I'm not 100% sure that Microsoft Defender is doing it, but I think they are, and I'm pretty sure Mimecast is doing something similar, where they're using AI as part of, or well, I should say probably more of machine learning to filter email coming in to detect it for business email compromise and phishing attempts, you know, at the entry point of the email coming into your environment. That's a really good use case for AI from a defense perspective. Again, it's not generative AI necessarily, but it is the use of an AI, you know, technology or, you know, a component of AI to do defense at scale.
Definitely. Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, it's the applications, again, it's kind of in the imagination, right? And the ability to apply, you know, different learning techniques as supervised, unsupervised, unsupervised for clustering would be, you know, taking us down that path, and then multidimensional data that we can't even necessarily visualize, let alone compute, that gives us really interesting opportunities. So yeah, fantastic. That's awesome, Randy. I do think you're a data analyst, by the way. Just, you've got the right vernacular, so I'm going to give you that hat. And,
I took a course.
There you go.
One course.
Perfect. Perfect. Tim, so now as we, you know, coming towards the end of our podcast together, but where do you see, or what does the future hold for generative AI in both cybersecurity, both offensive and defensive, you know, either side of that coin?
So I think you're going to continue to see a tug of war between both, as we see in all aspects of life. You're going to see threat actors trying to use generative AI. You're going to see defenders, you know, some of the big names out there trying to incorporate generative AI into their defenses. I think Randy said it really well at the beginning. You know, we're getting to the point where we're not going to be able to tell when things are generative AI enhanced, created. We're going to need to rely on generative AI systems themselves. You know, this goes down the road of Skynet with machines fighting machines. We've seen this movie before, but I think there's a lot of potential we have seen a lot of great stuff with generative AI and its ability to improve our lives, to simplify tasks, and really to expand our knowledge bases. I was a skeptic of generative AI when it came out at first, but I have come around to see that it is a very valuable resource for being able to do things better. Now, of course, we have to protect against abuse in that, and that's where the problems come in. I think cyber threat actors are going to eventually find ways to improve their ability to create those novel malware strains. That's going to be a big barrier that will be breached at some point. It's just inevitable at this point that these developments will occur, but you're going to see defenders catch up to that as well. I think it's really important for folks to keep in mind that this is just a new technology at this point that is slowly being integrated into everyday life. And it's really important for SLTTs, for everybody out there, to not want to rush into incorporating generative AI into everything they do, to continue to do the due diligence, to test the software out, leverage things like the CIS critical security controls for testing new software and applications, to make sure that wherever you're putting your data is still safe and secure, and you're not opening yourself up to new risks for potentially minimal gain. So it's a very exciting time in this field. It's very exciting to see where this continues to go. And I know CTI is going to continue to do a bunch of research on this to figure out both how it can be used to help SLTTs and also what folks need to do to defend themselves.
Fantastic, Tim. Yeah, and really over to you, Randy, for our final question here is, so how can U.S. SLTT state, local, tribal, territorial governments prepare for this? And how do they stay informed and proactive about this changing threat landscape?
Before I answer that, I do want to just recognize that Tim has come full circle and recognizes it. When he and I first started down this path in the end of 2022 and OpenAI first released ChatGPT, Tim was very adamant in his views on Gen AI being, leading us towards the singularity rapidly. And I've kind of always been on the opposite side. I'm like, bring it on. I'm ready to get plugged into the matrix. Let's go. So I could think maybe I've rubbed off on him a little bit. But no, I mean, back to your question. So focused really on how do we help organizations? And I wouldn't limit it just to the SLTT community, which, certainly is, we consider at CIS, we consider many of those organizations to be criminally underserved when it comes to cybersecurity resourcing, right? They don't necessarily have the money, the training, the people to deal with emerging cyber threats and even just keeping pace with, cybersecurity technology that's out there. I mean, the language is just changing day over day over day. I talk about this a lot, and I teach part-time as an adjunct instructor. I talk to my students often about this, like the pace at which we have to learn new technology is insane. The average human is ingesting over 75 gigabytes of data per day, which is more than what an educated person would have ingested in their entire lifetime around the time this country was founded. So, I mean, just in 200 years, more than 200 years, but, in a relatively short span of time, thinking about humanity, we have just massively exploded the amount of data that we're all taking in day after day. So it's normal for people to feel uncomfortable and to be confused with some of the language and to feel just totally outpaced. And I think Gen AI has just exploded that even more, right? I mean, it's just the amount of knowledge at your fingertips is insane. But there is a trust problem with that data, right? Tim talked about this a couple times. You have to go back and verify. And OpenAI and a couple others are really good about highlighting the fact that these models can make mistakes. The information that's in there is not necessarily truthful in all cases. And we know the story about the pizza recipe with glue and the cheese and all that kind of stuff. But, so I think that's something that whether SLTT or adjacent organizations and even individuals need to look at, what are the basic things that I can do to protect myself? One of the first things to do is trust but verify and make sure that whatever you're looking at, if you're using one of these models, that you're going back, you're using it again to augment your capabilities, not to replace a capability, not to just lift and shift into some new model or copy and paste it into the rest of your life. But the other thing for organizations, and I would say individuals too, but primarily organizations, it sounds cheesy, and we talk about it a lot at CIS, but really the basic basic's the wrong word, the essential cybersecurity controls. Basic makes it sound like it's easy to implement, and they're not, but they're relatively simple controls to put in place. If you just start with that, you know, kind of essential cyber hygiene, you offset the risk of a lot of this stuff, right? It doesn't matter if it's Gen AI enabled or not. It doesn't matter how good the phishing attack is. If you have MFA in place, multi-factor authentication in place, your systems are patched and updated, your staff is trained not to, you know, click on links that come from outside the organization. You know, if you have good mitigating controls in place for detection, you're logging things, you have an incident response plan, even if something does happen, you can invoke that plan really, really quickly. Those things really mitigate a ton of risk. And so that's probably the biggest thing that I would say right off the bat is just get the basics right. Right, start with that simple stuff because it offsets so much risk. Then certainly for local governments, if they're not a member of the MSISAC, they should be because there's a number of free and low-cost services that they can get, including support from Tim and the CTI team and our Security Operations Center and our Incident Response team. So I think those are probably key areas that I would focus. And the other thing I would say kind of broadly for the wider community, that something that I've mentioned in our blog on predictions, but we haven't really talked about it a ton, is thinking about what Gen AI does for access to data and capability more broadly. Or maybe I've been as the democratization of data. I think there's a lot of value there, right? People can have access to things and learn things that they might not have been able to before. Think about a kid struggling with math, and their teacher's just not doing it for them. They can go to ChatGPT and have it teach them mathematical concepts in a million different ways until they understand it, right? So that's such a powerful tool that if you think about applying it in the workspace, you can become more empowered as an individual employee. You can become more empowered as an organization. You can speed up the rote and boring tasks. You can improve your decision-making, right? There's a number of things like that, even accessibility concerns, right? You can help break down language barriers and other issues that would normally be considered accessibility issues. So I think there's a lot of like really high value work there in the Gen AI space. You just have to be mindful again of, you know, are you getting good data, making sure that, you know, you're going through that data with a fine tooth comb, making sure that it's legitimate and accurate, that, you know, there's no data poisoning attacks going on, things like that. And be very, very mindful of what you're putting into those models, because they become part of the training data set and effectively part of a public data set. So any organization that's using generative AI technology, especially if it's not one that's custom built for them and entirely in-house, be mindful of putting proprietary information in or intellectual property into those models.
100%. Trust but verify, Randy. Absolutely. Thank you. Again, Randy, Tim, phenomenal. I mean, all the work that you guys are doing, putting together the curation and really getting the word out, it is hugely impactful. And really to, you know, the audience. And as we think about building out capability in this area, thinking about how this affects and how we should be prepared for these elements through tabletop exercises, through subscription and threat services that are going to feed this type of information so we can make better decisions. Hugely, hugely impactful. So we're going to provide some links, and there's going to be a lot more material in this space and others coming from our cyber threat intelligence team in the near future. And I'm very excited to see what that is. Phenomenal work, Randy, Tim. Again, thank you so much for being on this episode.
And just to be sure, it's all Tim.
Wonderful. And again, thank you to our audience. Remember to subscribe in all the usual ways. Catch us on YouTube at The CI Security. Questions, comments, concerns, podcast@cisecurity.org. And with that, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.